Recruit Podcast Euro Special, where three lads discuss all things Euro 2024. On today's episode, we're down to the quarterfinals of the competition. Host Germany take on Spain. France, still yet to score from open play, face Portugal. Netherlands are up against a surprise package in Turkey. And the big one, England versus Switzerland on Saturday in Dusseldorf. I'm your host, Alex Murphy, and once again, I'm joined by Tom Lawrence and the returning Tom Gallagher. Boys, let's start with the 5 p.m. game on Friday, and it's Germany versus Tomo's dark horses in Spain. I'd say Spain have looked the strongest team in the tournament, but arguably Germany the second strongest. Lauro, how do you see that one panning out?
I'm not sure either have had any massive tests yet. Germany in particular, I think I've had a good route, and although Spain were in what was supposed to be a really difficult group, I don't think Croatia and Italy turned out to be much of a threat, so... This is what sorts the men from the boys, isn't it? And you'll be able to see from this who is the better team. I think Spain have looked the most scintillating, and I think they're a team with sort of round pegs in round holes, which is always good in the tournament. But the Germans are at home and have looked quite strong, and they look like they've got the belief that they could get to the final to me. So really, really interesting game. I'm hoping England are going to play Germany in the final. I think that would be such a mouth-watering clash behind enemy lines. So I'm kind of rooting for the Germans. But it's just nice that we can sit back and watch, obviously, two heavyweight quarterfinals tomorrow, knowing we don't have to play any of them until the final if we get there. So lovely for everyone to watch throughout the country. And difficult to pick two different styles. You just, for some reason, I just get the feeling that... the Germans might just old man them a little bit and have a little bit too much nous and know-how, but I think it'll be a good game.
Tomo, you obviously picked out Yamal as the sort of young player to watch. I think Nico Williams on the other wing's been amazing as well. Morata has looked bright. Fabian Ruiz in behind's looked like a good player as well. But Germany got a strong defence in Kimmich and Tarr and Rudiger. They've looked really good at the back. So it's going to be a real sort of battle there.
Yeah, it will be. And the sort of the one thing we haven't been tested on with Spain, I know they went 1-0 down against Georgia, but they equalised relatively quick and controlled the game pretty much before the before Georgia's goal anyway. What we haven't really seen is like a good defensive team frustrate Spain in a way that Germany definitely can do that. They've got Andrić in centre mid, who's kind of a bit of an enforcer. I do think it will be where like the midfield battle will be the most important. I know you just mentioned there Nico Williams and Lamine Yamal being their brightest sparks, but actually Rodri, unsurprisingly, has just been Man City Rodri, unbelievable. And Pedri, who sort of his fitness concerns were questioned a little bit going into the tournament because he hasn't played that much Barcelona since his big injury, but he's been just as good. And then obviously, as you mentioned, Fabian Ruiz pitched him with a couple goals and he's just as cute and brilliant on the ball as the others. So it's a really interesting game. I do expect Spain to have most of the ball and dominate the ball, but there's just something about it being in Germany being on a bit of a run. I know they struggled a little bit and had a little bit of luck against Denmark, but at the end of the day, they got the job done. Yeah, I can just see Germany getting one goal ahead and then just sneaking it, basically. But it's difficult to call because I think we can all agree, I think Spain have been the best team of the tournament so far, but quite often in these tournaments, the best team of the tournament don't go on to win the whole thing. I actually think maybe Spain in 2008, 2010, 2012, when they went on that unbelievable run, they were clearly the best team in those tournaments. So they're the only country really who have broken that rule. So maybe they can go on and do it again. But yeah, it's quite difficult to call this one. But I just fancy with German home advantage, I'd just edge towards them.
Yeah, I agree as well. I think they're both sides are well matched all over. But I actually think in Carvajal, Lenormand, Laporte, who's obviously been in Saudi, Cucurella, who is playing really well, but I think we've seen some of his shortcomings. I actually think that might be the difference, the German attack against that Spanish defence. I know Danny Carvajal is obviously Real Madrid legend, but I just think with Musiala, with Havertz playing as he is, Fulkrug coming off the bench, they've shown that they can play Florian Wirtz, or they can bring Leroy Sané in, who did really well, I thought, against Denmark to kind of go in behind that line. I think that might be the difference with that. And I think, agreeing with you boys, I think Germany might get the job done then. And as you say, it's going to be kind of roared on in front of a home crowd as well. I agree with Laura. I obviously counting our chickens a bit with England getting there, but I'd like it to be against Germany in the final. It would be such a event. And I always think the tournament's a little bit better when the hosts are in. I think it feels a little bit like the buzz goes a bit when your hosts go out early in a competition, because that sort of public buzz around the place just then goes down to the fans who are there kind of representing their country, rather than the whole country being buzzing about their team still being in it. So I think Germany will win and hope they do it as well. In the semi-final, they will take on one of France or Portugal. So two teams with unbelievable squads, but both have probably flattered to deceive so far. Laurie, with Portugal, I said before the tournament, they had a great chance, but shouldn't rely on Ronaldo too much. And to me, from watching them, I think they're just a bit held back with him on the pitch.
Yeah. There's a few memes that have gone around this week, and it was like, I can't remember who it was, but it was someone putting their baby or their toddler on a football pitch and sticking them with a ball in front of goal, and then just trying, everyone's just trying to get this kid to kick it in the net, and he just can't do it. And that was a bit like what Ronaldo was like the other night. I think he had like five or six shots, and he had about five or six free kicks as well, and all of them were just like crap. And I mean, the whole fiasco of him crying and stuff at half-time of extra time after he missed that penalty, it just looked like he'd gone really at the top level. And I think they've got players like Jota, for instance, we know he can play that position well, and maybe one or two others. So I would agree. I think they should probably say to Cristiano, look, we know you're upset, you missed the penalty, we're going to rest you for this one and maybe go with someone else. And I do you know what? I actually fancy Portugal to win that. I think that they might. I don't think France have been very good so far, and I think they might. They've sort of been powering through the last few competitions, just being a little bit better than everyone. But I think there's quite a lot of quality in that Portuguese team, and there might be one or two moments where they're able to open France up. And you know, I think Kylian Mbappe said he's seeing double at the moment with that mask on, and it's not helping him at all. So I've just got a feeling the Portuguese might go and beat the French, and we could see a Germany-Portuguese semi-final, which would be really good. And probably the two underdogs in those. I haven't seen the odds, but I would imagine they're the two underdogs in those semis. So interesting. But yeah, I'm not going to sit on the fence. I fancy Portugal there. I think they might just have a little bit too much for a slightly lacklustre France.
Can I just offer a counter-argument to that Ronaldo point? And I obviously half agree with you, especially with the free kicks. It was farcical towards the end, him taking those free kicks from the sort of positions that he was shooting from. It was it was a joke, really. But actually, in play, when he's in and around the box and he's had a couple of chances, he's only like half a yard or a couple inches away from getting those goals. And in those scenarios, I don't think he's doing too bad. He's missing that chance that he usually scores. And actually, there's an argument to say, because I think Roberto Martinez, there's no chance in hell he's dropping him. It will just become the story that engulfs that game, and then he's sort of damned. He's damned if he does, and damned if he doesn't. I just don't think he will. But there's an argument to say that Ronaldo's due a goal, and because he's getting the chances, and Portugal have got the quality to provide him with those chances. The likes of Bernardo, Bruno, they all look for him whenever they get into those crossing areas or those passing areas. I actually think he might score, and he might sort of be the difference. And I know that's a bit controversial, because he did look a little bit, well, he looks his age a little bit, especially. I just think the free kicks skewered that a little bit. And I know he's always the centre of attention in every game he plays anyway, but that and the crying incident made that even more so. But I've just got a feeling Ronaldo might just do something special. I just think he's on the edge of something. But then again, it might be the edge of another breakdown.
I hope you're right, not the breakdown. I hope you're right, and he is the match winner tomorrow, and he does pop up and score. And I agree to an extent, like, his movement in and around the box is just elite, unbelievable. But like you say, he's that 0.5% off. He's just not quite scoring the chance that he would have used to. I think it's the first group stage of Euros he's never scored in. And you would have had money on him to fill his boots. So clearly he's not quite at the level, but it's just whether they've got someone that can do the better job. But you might be right with the point about it sort of becomes the story of dropping him if they don't play him. It's sort of done if you do, done if you don't, if you're Bobby Martinez. So you're right. He probably will go down the lines of thinking, well, he's on the edge of scoring one. Can the story be that Ronaldo comes and gets us past the French tomorrow? And I'd love to see that, because as soon as the French are out of the tournament, it feels like it's anyone's, doesn't it? But whilst they're still there, they kind of linger in the background with Mbappe and quite a strong know-how of winning tournaments. And they just play with a little less fear than everyone else because they've won so much. It's like because they don't care if they lose as much, they can play with more freedom, whereas England are the complete opposite, for example. So I'd love Portugal to win. I'd love Ronaldo to do it. But like you say, we're probably never going to find out what it would be like with Jota playing there instead or whoever else they've got. So we'll see how it pans out. But two unbelievable games to have back-to-back on one night. We were just saying earlier, yeah, it's like having like Fury AJ and Lennox Lewis, Mike Tyson in the same night. It's just gluttonous. I think I would have rathered one tonight, one Friday, one Saturday, one Sunday. Murph asked that question earlier. I definitely would. But tomorrow is an absolute feast of European Championship football. So,
Tommy, Tommy, just on Ronaldo, do you think it's a little bit like United Ronaldo, where everyone's performance maybe comes down a little bit because they're kind of hell-bent on getting the ball to Ronaldo? Like, I remember watching Bruno when he came back, and he became really frustrating because it was just get the ball into the box, like, for Ronaldo. I read an article on him as well that he created loads of problems at Juventus, but sort of got the team out of those problems by being that man. Like, their style of play went down because, and I thought United's did as well. And I think that's actually caused a bit of a downturn over a couple of seasons since Ronaldo's gone from that Oli team. And Oli's spoken about it before in the podcast that he did. But it feels to me like Portugal's overall performance dropped. So we can all see that Ronaldo's not at the level that he once was, and maybe that half an inch off or a couple percentage points off. But maybe what you can't see is the fact that great players are playing differently to how they would, because they're all so in, it sounds stupid to say, but almost like in awe of Ronaldo and feel the need to be getting the ball to him.
I would agree that he did that with Juventus and at United, although the players around him at United were terrible as well. But with this Portugal team, they've got so many, like, they press really hard. They've got a really good style of play. So actually, Ronaldo's sort of lack of pressing is not too much of an issue, because everyone's almost in the last 30 yards of the pitch all pressing at the same time. So whenever they win the ball back, Ronaldo's there, or Ronaldo's never too far away from the defenders or the midfielders to maybe make one or two sprints to press. But there is definitely something in that. But then if you compare it to England, like when Palmer gets the ball or Saka gets the ball on the right, they're crossing it for Kane, aren't they? It's just because Ronaldo's the striker.
Yeah.
And so naturally, 8 times out of 10, they'll be aiming for him anyway. I just think, like, we talk about fine margins a lot on this podcast. It's become a bit of a cliche, but the last game, I don't think it was that sort of, it was that much of a joke. I just think he missed one or two chances in which, if he scores them, everyone's going, oh, like, look at, like, Ronaldo, he's like rolling back the years, and Portugal, what would they be without him? So it's almost a couple yards here or there, and he scored a brace and fired him into the quarterfinal. So, yeah, just a point actually I want to make to roll it back to France a little bit before we move on this game, is what I like about them and Deschamps, and if you listen to some of the players' interviews, they, in comparison to, say, England, who are quite, like, touchy about the negativity towards their playing style, etc., France get a lot of shit from the French media and from the France fans because of the talent and the array of talent they've got, but they never really play that well. I think they've scored 2 own goals in this tournament and a penalty in 4 games. So arguably they play, I know they keep the ball a bit better than England, but they play just as sort of with the handbrake on as much as England. But Deschamps comes out and says, I don't give a shit. I'm playing Rabiot alongside Kante. And Tchouaméni came out the other day and said, I don't care if we win 4-0 or 1-0. All I want to do is win. And they were talking about, one of them, I think it was Upamecano, said about Belgium, just said, like the Belgians were giving the French stick about something. And he just said, look, well, let's play on the day they play and we'll win. Like, all they care about is winning. And when you've got Saliba, Upamecano, and then Kante, and it was, I think because Rabiot's going to be suspended for this game, I think they're going to be playing Camavinga and Tchouaméni. Like, how hard is that to break down? So it's going to be such an interesting game when you've got that sort of back five in the centre of the pitch, and you've also got Bruno, Bernardo, Ronaldo, like all covering that space. It'll be interesting to see who wins that battle. And obviously, whoever wins that battle will probably win the game.
Yeah, definitely. I just think the French, as Zoro says, while they're in the tournament, they are the most dangerous side there because of their previous. And there's a real opportunity for them to be knocked out here by a big side, because even though they're probably playing the worst out of the four teams still on that side of the draw, the one I'd want least in the final would probably be them, I'd say. I would really, really worry about it. As you say, they're really solid at the back. I think in that game we played them in the World Cup, it felt like Kane was completely isolated, sort of being shrugged off the ball and that sort of thing. So, I wouldn't like the French at all. So hoping the Portuguese can get it done. Laurie?
Where did you two sit on predictions there? I went for Portugal.
I'm going France. Although I did say I fancy Ronaldo to be the sort of the game changer, but I just can't ever see past France.
I think there's a nice story there about the whole kind of Mbappe's hero was Ronaldo, them coming off against each other in a game, and who, you know, sort of, is it the passing of the guard? I'm going to go draw penalties, best keeper in the world at penalties, Diogo Costa wins it for Portugal.
25% or might be 26% of all penalties he's ever faced, he saved, that keeper. So that's unbelievable, wasn't it?
He was a cheat code. He stood and waited for which way the player went and then just dived there and stopped it. It was impossible to score. The Slovenians were running up, picking their spot and placing it there, and he just waited for it and was like, oh, right, just dive that way. I've never seen a display like it.
Yeah.
120 minutes of hard graft for Slovenia, celebrating every goal kick just to go to that and just lose 3-0 in a penalty shootout.
And also, you forget the Benjamin Sesko chance in, like, what, the 116th minute?
Yeah.
Do you know what I took from that, actually, Tomo? Sesko's been linked with, like, big clubs, honey, but signed this new deal. And I've watched Højlund this tournament for Denmark, and he's looked like a young lad. And I thought Sesko looked the same. And there's a real lack of quality strikers in the world, isn't there, where those two need to go for 70, 80 mil transfer fees to get them into your club, because they are not close to being the finished article, either of them, are they?
No, but I mean, even so, still an unbelievably massive save from Costa.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, unbelievable. And Pepe, he was like collapsed to the floor, didn't he, after Costa saved it? Like, his last major tournament for his country, and that was about to be his defining moment. But keeper came up clutch and then won the penalties. So yeah, I think then that we've got a France, a Portugal in normal time, and I'm Portugal on penalties. So really looking forward to that one. And obviously we'll preview the semi-final when we get there for the other teams. Moving over to the other side of the draw, I'm going to leave England till last. So I want to come on to Netherlands versus Turkey. Netherlands finished third in the group behind France and Austria, but they look good against Romania. Tomo, a turning point in the competition for them, or Romania poor on the day?
Yeah, I was quite disappointed with Romania, actually. It was one of those ones where they started the game really well, first 15 minutes, and you thought, cool, they could get at him here. And Netherlands looked a bit tetchy and nervous. And then Netherlands score on the break, and it changed the whole momentum of the game. And Romania's belief just, you saw it just go. And I just thought, I'm not sure if Romania were any good, to be honest. And it will be a much better game in a semi-final. I think Germany, they've got a massive Turkish contingent in the country. And actually, I don't know if you heard this, but on one of the podcasts, I was listening to one of the podcasts, and they were saying that Turkey, that Turkey-Austria game was one of the only games in the whole of the tournament that was streamed behind a paywall in Germany. And there's like a massive controversy amongst all of the Turkish community who live in Germany, because it's on their version of Sky Sports as opposed to BBC or ITV. And also the fun thing about that game as well is Netherlands is like next door to Germany, and you've seen the crowds that Netherlands are bringing. So it's going to be an unbelievable atmosphere. I don't know why, but I just think Netherlands, even though I think on paper their defence is the strongest, for some reason their defence is not quite, like Van Dijk is making some mistakes that you don't usually see. I just fancy Turkey to get the job, and it'd just be one of those nights where I'm posting, like, look at these scenes all over Football Tweet, and it's just Turkish fans going absolutely nuts in and around Germany, in and around Turkey, and in the stadium as well. Just because I fancy the Turks to get the job done. I think their star player, Hakan Çalhanoğlu, if I pronounced it right, he's back, isn't he? So they'll have a little bit more stardust as well in midfield than they did against the Austrians.
Well, add it to Arda Güler, the lad from Real Madrid, who looks unbelievable, just adding to Real Madrid's wealth of talent, and then keeper pulling off saves like he did against Austria in the 98th minute. They're clearly a strong team. But, Laura, they are a surprise package. They've played some great football, been involved in great games. I think I remember you calling out the Turkey-Georgia game in the first round of group games. Tomo's just touched on the fans there as well. They'll be dreaming now with the side of the draw that they've got of potentially making it through to the semi and then the final.
Yeah, I disagree with that prediction, though. I think Holland will do it. I thought they were good, really good against Romania. Really impressive. Thought they controlled that game really easily. And 3-0, we haven't seen many score. I know it's not loads, but we haven't seen many really comfortable score lines like that this tournament. For them to go and do that, I thought with relative ease, was quite impressive. I think Gakpo's been really... Fabregas did a piece on him the other day, and he was really good, actually. He's a really good pundit, and he was quite succinct of what he said. He just said he is such a functional player. Like, you play him in a position, he plays it really well, and he takes chances as well. He's a good goal scorer, even from wide, and he's, I think, the joint top scorer in the competition. I won't bet against him getting some against Turkey. And I agree with, like, the Turkey backing. Their fans have been amazing. It's kind of blended into this agent of chaos type facade that they've got, whereby they're making last minute saves and they're getting goals from corners, and they're kind of winning the mental battle against teams. But that generally runs out if there's a bit more quality in front of you, and I think Holland have got enough to do so. But we'll see. I'd love Turkey to win, because I think we'll beat them in the semis. I'd much rather play Turkey personally than Holland. I think I've said before, I think Holland would be horrible for us, although Tigo's not been too impressed with their defence. I think they're one of those teams that are a bit better going forward than a lot of the teams we played already, and as good defensively. And I think that could be a little bit of kryptonite for us. So I'd rather Turkey win, but I see the Netherlands going through.
I mean, this Netherlands side, right, we're saying maybe, I know they conceded 3 against Austria and haven't looked as good at the back as maybe they should be, but this is a team that's got Van Dijk, Nathan Ake and De Vries from Inter Milan. That's leaving out De Ligt, who looks like he's on the cusp of moving to United, but has been at massive clubs. Mickey van der Ven, know how impressed we've been with him at Spurs this season. And then their fullbacks, Denzel Dumfries, Frimpong, we've not seen much of going forward as well. I think they've looked good in midfield. Laurie called out Xavi Simons in the game against Romania.
Yeah. He was everywhere. He was everywhere the other night, and I've not really seen... does he play for PSG? Did someone say?
No, he plays for RB Leipzig, but he's on loan from PSG.
Right, okay. I've not seen him play before. He caught my eye the other night. I thought he was absolutely everywhere for the Dutch. And it's rare for someone to do that. So I thought I'd pick him out as player of the match there. And obviously, if you've got players that you haven't even heard of adding to the, all those big names that Holland have got that you have heard of, it sort of, again, brings me to think they're quite a good side and they've got a little bit more than maybe what was expected pre-tournament, and they'll be favourites to get into a semi-final, won't they, now? So, yeah, I liked him, yeah. Though, Xavi. I like the fact he had Xavi on the back of his shirt as well. I thought that was cool.
And then Gakpo, you says, joint top goal scorer in the competition, looking really strong. I think an area of weakness for them, centre-forward, I think they created a lot of chances against Romania. I don't think Memphis Depay puts one in two chances away that maybe you need to at that level. I think he's more sort of one in four, one in five. So if he comes up against a big team, a good defence, is he going to be the person who scores the goal? But they'll just bring big Wout Weghorst off the bench anyway, who seems at international level to just score with his first touch. So yeah, they've surprised me actually, Netherlands. I know they did finish third in their group and they've only beaten Romania since in the round of 16. But I was surprised with that performance, because we'll come on to England in a bit, but international football is proving hard in this tournament, and they tore Romania apart.
Isn't it mental that Netherlands finished third in their group, but would have had the easiest route to the final out of any other team?
Yeah. Yeah, they potentially could be Romania, Turkey, Switzerland to the final.
Yeah, or England.
I'm hoping England.
Don't you think that... I think there's an argument to say, maybe we'll have a chat after the tournament ends, but there's an argument to say the group stage was a bit of a farce because 16 out of the 24 teams went through.
I thought that was crap. I think we said that on one of the pods the other day. That's absolute shite. It can't be. It's almost not worth doing. At one point, we were saying there was a chance you could go through with 2 points. I don't think that happened in the end, but ridiculous. It's got to be just the top two from each one go through, I think.
Surely there's enough nations that are in the Euro qualifiers that you just bring other nations along. You know, we've got like Wales and Republic of Ireland, but you think you've got like Norway, Sweden, countries like that that aren't in it. Could you not make a slightly bigger group stage and then go through to the last 16 with 8 groups rather than 6 groups, and your top two go through to do the round 16? I know it's more group games, but who doesn't like 3 games a day at 2, 5 and 8 for a couple of weeks of the summer? It makes more money for the host nation, makes more money for UEFA. I can't see the downside in having that, as opposed to teams on 2 points potentially playing out a draw to sneak through, to play someone as a third place qualifier.
Yeah, I agree.
I completely agree. And they'll probably will do that, considering, you know UEFA and FIFA like to expand tournaments left, right and centre to get more money. So, yeah.
Has it always been like this, the Euros? I don't remember it, but has it always been like you almost can't go home unless you're Scotland?
No, it used to be a 16-team tournament. So 4 groups of 4, and then top 2 go through. Yeah, straight to quarterfinals,
Fair dues. Well, that's too small. So I like your idea, Murph, of a couple more groups, and then top 2 go through.
I'd love, like, you think, like, some of the players as well, like, it's a travesty you don't get to see Haaland and Odegaard in a competition. Mm. I know they've not qualified, so they're clearly not good enough, but still, big players, big moments.
Like,
so,
former winners, Greece, like, Sweden are always good value. Like you say, there's plenty of nations there that you could be getting some good matches out of, and sometimes it's the smaller nations that provide the best games.
Well, yeah, you've seen, you know, Georgia and teams like that have provided real entertainment. So if you had extra teams in there, I just think it adds to the overall product. But how much football is too much football? But save that for a different day. Right, let's move on to the big one then, boys. I think we've gone there just to recap. We've got Netherlands to win that one, but Tomo thinks that Turkey might do it, and he'll be posting scenes from Istanbul on Footy Tweet. But all games we've got, I think so far, we've had different winners other than the first one. But England, Switzerland, I'm going to start off on a positive note, which is that Switzerland haven't beaten England since 1981. There's been 10 games since then. England have either won them or have been a draw, but England have won the majority. We'll come on to the formation in a bit, but looks like England are going to go back to a formation that's been a winning recipe for Gareth Southgate so far. And Jude Bellingham is not going to be banned for his gesture that he made. Looks like he's going to get a fine rather than a ban, which is obviously the sensible outcome. So all that being said, where's your confidence level at, Lauro, for Saturday, 5 p.m.?
As it normally does, it's picked up through the week. If straight after Slovakia, I was thinking, Christ, let's just enjoy the next week because we're not ready to go in against a side that can play, because a lot of the sides that can't play that we've played have been as good, if not better than us, and unlucky not to win. But as the week's gone on, particularly with the news that it sounds like we're going to go to a back three, that would be really good, because I think it would, A, it sounds like it might get Foden and Bellingham into some squarer holes, whereby they're both tens and the width comes from the fullbacks, and B, it's just a change from something that just hasn't been working. So I'm really excited to see that. But then the next question is, if we do go to a back three and play that sort of 3-4-2-1 or whatever it will be, is who the wing-backs are going to be. Because instantly I thought, well, Saka will probably, if Shaw's not fit, it'll be Saka at left wing-back and Trent at right wing-back. And that's a really good way of getting Trent in and some width. But then you look back to the last Euros, where you're quite right, we played that against Germany and Italy in the final, but Trippier was the right wing-back. Is he just going to stick with Trippier out on the right wing-back and give Kyle Walker maybe a bit more stability in that side of defence? So that would be the next question. But if we start with Trent and Saka wide, we're almost playing a 3-2-5. And you're just going to have Saka and Trent going. We're going to have Kane up front and then Bellingham and Foden doing bits and pieces in behind. And that would be really exciting to see. So, yeah, more optimistic than I was at the weekend. I'm glad there's talk there's going to be change to the shape. That's what I called for, I think, on the last pod. And now it's let's wait and see what the personnel looks like. Of course, one massive blow is Ferrari Mark. Player of the tournament for me so far, certainly for England.
Tomo, on that back three and then the wing-backs, expecting Ezri Konsa to come in as the third centre-back, and then what do you think from a wing-back perspective if we do go with that three?
Well, I'm with Laura. I kind of hope that he plays Trent and Saka, or if Luke Shaw's fit, play Luke Shaw. But I've just got a funny feeling he'll play Trent on the right and Trippier on the left, which... like. I know you're both huffing and puffing, and I completely agree. But I just think with Gareth Southgate, quite often he like gives with one hand and takes with the other. So like everyone's screaming and saying we need to change something, and he just changes something that you just completely baffles you. But yeah, I at the end of the day, it's encouraging that we're changing to a three. And I agree with the formation. It's basically a 3-4-2-1. And I like the fact that we're going to be playing a box in the centre of midfield, really, with Foden and Bellingham and Mainoo and Rice. Because like United did against Man City in the FA Cup final, it completely stifled Rodri and the likes of that. And the one player that worries me for Switzerland is Granit Xhaka. I think he's got like... I don't think he's a world-class player, but I think he's got a world-class performance in him. And for some reason, there's just something about him that makes me think that he really, really would love to stick it up the English fans who gave him shit when he was at Arsenal. And he's the type of player who can deliver a performance like that, where you just, you know, like the type of like, I'm not comparing him to Pirlo, but when Pirlo did that Italy 2012 performance, it was like he was toying with us. And I just think maybe Xhaka's the one player who can do that for Switzerland, who's got the quality. They've obviously got Mbolo and Ndoye up front, who have shown bits of quality, can miss a couple chances, but they're definitely useful and a handful. So I'm worried. I'm just worried about Granit Xhaka, basically. And I think that box in the centre of the midfield will hopefully will stifle his space, basically, and just stifle his effect on the game.
Yeah, I just wanted to say about the left, we can't, that Trippier can't play left wing back. That would just be fucking ridiculous. It is almost just compounded the problem that he can't play that side effectively. But one good thing is if you play Saka there, or even a returning to fit Luke Shaw, Ezri Konsa will be on the left side of that back three. And a lot of the lads there, and I've heard this before at Villa, and you see it in the Premier League, he's a really good one-on-one defender. So if he is left a little bit exposed, he's a good player to go and deal with that situation. And we've got so much good attacking play, and the whole country calls for this all the time. We should be able to do enough at the top half of the pitch to, I don't care if Switzerland have a couple of chances, as long as we're having chances and not our first shot on target being an overhead kick in the 94th minute. It cannot be Trippier. It cannot be I'd rather it be Trippier, Trent dropped, and Trippier right wing back and play Shaw or Saka. We need some width down that left-hand side, and it needs to work better than it has. So you're right, though. Southgate does like to give with one and take with the other. I really, really hope he doesn't do that.
My question around give one hand, take with the other is, do you think he'll stick with Kobbie Mainoo, or do you think think if we're going forward with those full wing-backs and the 10s, and we've got a back three there, that I want two sitters and he brings Conor Gallagher back in, or do you think he will stick with Kobbie?
No.
I do think there's a good argument to have Conor Gallagher in, just because he's so like ratty and quite sharp in the tackle and stuff. But Kobbie Mainoo's, like, he got a man of the match performance in an FA Cup final. I'm not trying to compare England to that United performance, but when you play that box four, you rarely get sort of caught out, like, giving up so much space in the centre, where, like, a Mainoo's, I guess he's a little bit guilty of that when he plays in a three, just because maybe he's not quite got, he's still only 18, 19, so he's not quite got the awareness off the ball to cover those spaces. And obviously when you play that four with Foden, Bellingham and Rice, there's a bit more protection there. So, and I think he's going to be really important in keeping the ball, and that's going to be a massive part of the game on Saturday, because like they've got a couple of really good centre mids, and that Freuler got man of the match last game, didn't he? I think he was at Nottingham Forest. I don't know who he's at now, but and then obviously Granit Xhaka, and Granit Xhaka's class. So they have the ability to keep the ball and play. There's a misconception that it will be like basically playing a better Slovakia. But it won't be like that at all. I think they'll go for it. And I think they'll look at England and the way England are playing, and they'll be like, we can just go and dominate them. So, and hopefully that plays in our hands a little bit, because, we might give up one or two chances, like Laura says, but we'll definitely get chances that way.
The only thing with that box midfield, because you're right, if it is Foden and Bellingham in like two tens, although we played the back three in the last Euros, we didn't play it like that, did we? We then had Saka and Sterling wide, and it was just a very wide sort of... And then it was just Phillips and Rice in the midfield. So it would be a new formation. I don't remember us ever playing this before. With like Rice, Mainoo, Bellingham, Foden, Kane. So it would be very interesting to see how it goes. Because although we played a back three, or back five, whichever way you want to look at it, the picture at the front was completely different. It was two wide men still and sort of overlapping that way. So it might be that it goes to a back three and keeps Saka on the right and keeps Foden out left and just plays Bellingham with Rice.
If reports are to be believed, apparently he's tried three different types of like setup with that back three. So he's tried a 3-4-3, which I guess is your three centre-backs, your two holders, your wing-backs, and then a front three, which I imagine would be Foden out on one wing, say Saka out on the other, and then Kane, and then maybe Bellingham would play in that too. He might have tried that. A 3-5-2 with a second recognised striker. I want to come on to that in a bit with Switzerland's strong defence and big Ivan Toney. And then the formation that you guys have just spoken about, that more kind of playing two tens in Foden and Bellingham, and having that box midfield with your two sitters, which is going to be Rice and one other. So it's exciting, but on the other hand, it's a bit scary, isn't it, that you're 2 days out and we're playing about with potential formations and tinkering with what we go for in a back three. Maybe that's just media reports and Gareth Southgate knows what he's doing, but it's clearly not plan A, is it?
No, but then plan A, although it's got us this far, it hasn't really worked. And Gareth Southgate and the coaching staff are not—they're not stupid. They're coming out and defending the team because they have to, but they're going back in the coaching sessions and going, "Fuck me, lads! This is not what we're training for." And do you know what? One name we haven't mentioned, which I know you want to move on to Switzerland in a minute, but is Cole Palmer. And there's an argument to play Cole Palmer instead of Saka in any formation. Yeah. Obviously, unless he plays left wing back, which then you wouldn't do that. But because Cole Palmer, he's the one attacker for me, well, more so than Foden and Saka anyway. I know Saka's had a couple good halves, but he's the one playing with a bit more freedom, a little bit more confidence, and a little bit more like he's just playing down the park with his mates and he just fancies. Like, so there's a good shout for him to play because he's got that quality as well when he cuts inside. and just plays. You know, like how Lamine Yamal's been playing that Lamine Yamal cross all tournament where he cuts inside and then just sort of swings one around the back post. And quite often, I think Fabian Ruiz has got on the end of a couple. I think Cole Palmer's an expert at that. And when you look at the late runs of Bellingham in the run in the box and obviously Kane, that could be perfect for them. So we have got options and Cole Palmer's definitely one of them.
Yeah, that was another thing they were saying earlier. If we play the sort of the most likely, I guess, which is the 3-4-2-1, he could just drop Bellingham back in next to Rice because we've got three centre-backs, so there's a little bit more stiffness in the middle of the park, and then put Palmer next to Foden in like a one of two tens behind Kane. So, like you say, loads of exciting options. And I agree, like, although it is a little bit scary that we're sort of making a departure from what Plan A was, no one wants Plan A. Plan A was rubbish, really bad.
I wouldn't like that to happen, though, that team there, Laura. I wouldn't want Bellingham in as the second midfielder. I'm not saying that he's not disciplined, but because he does do his fair share of defensive work, but I think he's quite maverick, as in he'll pop up on the left-hand side, he'll be stood at left-back, then he's at right-back. I want this second midfielder to be a midfielder. I don't really think passing's the strongest part of Bellingham's game either. And if we're going to be in a game against the Swiss, we're going to try and control midfield, as Tomo alluded to. You want to keep the ball. So I want him up in one of those 10s. I think Palmer's got the best chance if we've got those two 10s are coming off the bench for one of Bellingham or Foden in that 10 role. I'd be way more worried if we go to a back three for the likes of Jared Bowen and Anthony Gordon. I don't think they get any more minutes if we go with that style, because we're not going to be playing wingers, are we? Eze, you could maybe add into that, albeit he did do a bit of a stint at left wing back for us against Slovakia, but I think that was needs must for that formation with who we had on the pitch based on the fact we've gone 2-1 up. But I think if we go to back three with wing backs, I'd be really concerned for the wingers who've travelled. Gordon we've not seen anyway, but I think that would be the end of Jared Bowen's tournament. Another option, 4-4-2 is not a formation anymore. It's a bit more bougie football, but you could go 3-5-2. And Laurie, we spoke last time about Big Ive. I just want to revisit that. Switzerland have got a strong back three in Akanji, Fabian Schär and Rodriguez. Do you think there's a place for Ivan Toney to go up there and help Harry Kane out so he doesn't get sort of mauled by three centre-halves and just kind of take a bit of that pressure and hold the ball up?
No.
Can I come in as well?
Actually, that's enough for me. No.
Yeah, because you boys did make the argument on the last podcast, and I do agree. But I think the best use for Ivan Toney is if we're losing 1-0 in the 60th minute or 65th minute, then do that. But yeah. I just can't see any scenario Southgate doing that. So it's almost like moot, even sort of discussing whether he's going to start him.
He's not going to lose a player from somewhere else on the park to have another striker, is he? Southgate. Yeah. He's the last person in the world to want to do that. Is it as exciting as it would be to see? But in knockout football, when you only get one chance, he's going to go with what he thinks. I was just going to say there, like, we change into a back three. I'm not even sure we change into a back three because Southgate doesn't think it's worked. I think it might just be because Gueye's gone and he doesn't trust Konsa in a two. Do you know what I mean? If Gueye was here, I think we might still see a back four. And something very similar on Saturday. So maybe it's a blessing in disguise that Ferrari Marks got suspended.
Switzerland are back three, and I think De Holland play a back three as well, Tomo, who are likely semi-finalists. It's almost like you could go man for man with them and just say, look, man for man on the pitch, we think we're better than you. We're not going to be beat by your formation. We think we're going to be better than you. So I'm hoping that he sticks with it. But you're right, we might get through this game and he brings Ferrari back in and he goes back to the back four. But if we do win, we're going to have to play well to beat Switzerland, which means the formation would have worked. It's then a massive call to revert back to group stage and round of 16 formation.
I quite like the amount of respect we're giving Switzerland at the moment, because if we'd been playing quite well, this might be a bit of a banana skin in terms of, I didn't see that coming from the Swiss. And before you know it, you're 1-0 down and you're trying to break down the door in the last. We know that, or we've got the sort of mindset that they're quite a good side now. And the players will be thinking that as well. And I think Gareth Southgate might just be thinking, look, a lot of people are expecting Switzerland to have a good chance in this game. But remember, we've got amazing players. We're far better than them on paper. This could be a chance to go out and just put a stamp down and use a bit of the negativity and the lack of expectation to go and stamp a bit of authority on the tournament. It would be a great time to do it going into the semi-final. And then I said this the other day, Switzerland drew with Scotland. They're not amazing, are they? They're just a little bit better than what you'd expect the Swiss to be normally.
Right, it's time then. Tomo, start with you. Prediction, please. Winner and method of victory.
England to win. 2-0. Everything comes off. Perfect day. We all start singing Atomic Kitten and we start singing It's Coming Home. And yeah, and then obviously we sit down comfortably to watch Turkey, Netherlands.
Lauren?
I think it'll be 4. Nil. No, I do think it'll be 4-0. I think we're going to batter them. I think we'll play them off the park. I think we're due the performance. This isn't me, but I think we'll play them off the park. I think we're due a performance. And I think the fact that we've had our hands forced into maybe changing the shape will help us and maybe put some of our better players in their better positions, and we'll bear the fruit of that. So I'm going for a comfortable England win.
Love it. 2-1 England. Foden puts us 1-0 up. Harry Kane scores a penalty in the first half, and then England revert to type of sitting back in deeper. That back three turns to a back five. Switzerland grab one back, but we hold on, see it through, and we're through to the semi-finals. But doesn't matter how we do it, as long as we get there and then roll on Wednesday night. Boys, that's all we got time for. We'll be back, obviously, off the back of the quarterfinals, review all the action, look ahead to the semi-final action that are happening on Tuesday and Wednesday. Cheers, boys. Pleasure as always.
Cheers, lads.
1, 2, 3.